Okay. So let's now move into the problem. We decided we'll postpone the problem of the day on a dynamic programming thing till right before the midterm, so we have an example to talk about then. I'd like to have us get into starting next class. We'll move back into the problem of the day schedule here. But I'd like to now start a unit on graphs and graph algorithms. And what's interesting about graphs and graph algorithms is that, first of all, graphs are very important structures in computer science. You've probably certainly if you took AMS 301, you learned about graphs. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about graph theory. Is that correct? Are there any other classes in here you talk about graphs? What other classes do you talk about graphs in? Okay. Do you get any graphs in data structures? You take the data structures class or 113? Okay. Not a great response there. But basically, graphs are what I think one of the fundamental representations of data that you use in computer science, okay? And what is a graph? Well, it depends upon who you ask. If you ask a stockbroker, this is what a graph is, okay? This is after we go to war or something like that. That is not the kind of graph that we're talking about, okay? Computer scientists, graphs are systems of points, okay, and lines, or more precisely, vertices and edges. And in the max cut problem, that is really a problem on graphs, right? You've got vertices. You've got selected pairs of vertices, which are edges. Your goal is to find the partition of the vertices to maximize the number of edges that got cut. Graphs are important because they come up in lots of places. Because just about any relationship between pairs of objects can somehow be captured as a graph. So, for example, a road network. Okay, if you want to represent the road network on a computer, a typical way to represent it is the cities or the junctions will be the vertices, and the pairs of cities that are connected by road. Okay, those pairs will be edges. Okay, and so if you want to represent a roadmap in a computer, okay, you would use it by a graph representation. If you want to represent an electronic circuit, okay, in a computer, okay, again, I don't know how much electronics people take these days, okay, but certainly you know that there are computers or electronic devices. There are resistors, capacitors, transistors, things like that, and they're wired together. You can model a network as a graph, an electrical network as a graph, where the vertices represent the junctions, and the edges would represent the wires, perhaps with components, between junctions. Okay? And so this is how, let's say, a computer-aided design package might represent an electronic circuit. Okay, you will represent it as a graph. And a lot of the analysis that you do on electronic circuits is really an analysis of the graph type variety. Is there a connection between these two points? Okay, does every point reach ground? Things like that. These are graph theoretic kinds of things. Any questions? Okay, so to understand many problems and formalize many problems, you have to think about them in terms of graphs. And this is me as an algorithm designer, one of the simplest things I do that gives me a lot of bang for the buck is taking a problem that walks in the door and restating it as a graph problem. Okay? There's a certain number of basic graph algorithm problems you will study in this course. If you look at the book, max cut is a graph problem. Shortest path is a graph problem. Minimum spanning tree is a graph problem. There are a few abstract graph problems that smart people have figured out algorithms to solve, smarter people than me. But what is good is that now that they have solved them, if I can convince myself that the problem that I want to solve is really when you name it properly, a minimum spanning tree thing. I don't have to design an algorithm for it. I say use the minimum spanning tree algorithm. Use the shortest path algorithm. So a lot of the work in modeling graph problems is learning how to describe your problem as a graph. Okay? So this is sort of the simple skill. Okay? But if you don't get this far, it's hopeless. Any questions? So one thing that I encourage you to do is to start to look at the world as a graph. Okay? And let's talk a little bit about the world as a graph. Okay? So, again, the vertices of a graph, you know, there's lots of different problems you can think of by graphs. And so one that just to sort of get people thinking about graphs and the properties of them, I'd like to talk about the friendship graph. Let's say we can define a graph where the vertices of the graph are people, and there is an edge between any two people if they are friends. Okay? This is, I claim, a perfectly well-defined graph. Okay? Once you define what friendship is. So here's a figure which actually I've been using for a long time, but it's actually still kind of interesting. Okay? I have five people: Reagan, Bush, Hussein, Reagan's wife, and Sinatra. And I have friendship links between pairs of people known to be friends. Okay, so George Bush and Reagan were friends. Sinatra was friend. Reagan was a friend with his wife, and his wife was a friend with Sinatra. Hussein, then as now, did not seem to have very many friends. Okay? So what is the situation? This graph, I claim, is well defined on any set of people you can talk about. If the set of people we have to talk about in this, are the people in this class, some of you are going to be linked by pairs of friends. Some of you won't be. Maybe I will be the Saddam Hussein character here and not have any friends. Okay? But I claim that this is a graph, this relationship, the friendship relation, is captured by a graph. Any questions about that? Okay? So what is interesting about that? We can start to ask ourselves questions about the friendship graph that are really going to be graph theoretic questions, okay? And, you know, we can, you know, and so I'm going to use this to sort of motivate some basic graph theory terminology, okay? If I am your friend, does that mean that you are my friend? Okay, is that true or false? Well, it depends upon what your friends are like, right? Okay, in an ideal world, we would like to think that if I'm your friend, you're my friend. Okay, not all of that has felt that was true by experience. What you're really asking when you're asking this question, okay, is the friendship graph an undirected graph? What do you mean by an undirected graph? An undirected graph, the graph is undirected if the edge xy implies that yx is an edge in the graph. Okay? Otherwise, we say a graph is directed. Okay? So one of the first questions when you have a graph theory problem, you want to ask yourself, is it a directed or undirected graph? Because the algorithms you have to use may be different. Certain things you can do on directed graphs, if not on undirected graphs, and so on. So the Herdoff graph, let's say we define the Herdoff graph, where, you know, there's an edge from me to you if I have heard of you. Is that a directed graph or an undirected graph? That's directed, right? I have heard of Sylvester Stallone. Sylvester Stallone has not heard of me. Okay, correct? What about the had sex with graph? Okay? If I have sex with you, have you had sex with me? Okay? Okay? What? Undirected. As far as I like to know and think about, it is undirected. Okay? Any questions? Okay, yes. Okay, well, this we're not going into. Basically, the important in the way I like to think of the world, had sex with graph is undirected. Okay? What about any other relations we can think about? What about blood relation? You know, somehow that there's sort of some genetic connection between you. Is that directed or undirected? Undirected, right? Okay? And the shook hands with graph, is that directed or undirected? Undirected, okay? It's important to keep that in mind. When you look at a graph, first question,
directed, undirected.
A second question is, are you your own friend? Okay, this is maybe a philosophical or sociological question. But it's really asking in the friendship graph, is there an edge from a vertex to itself? Okay? And some graphs have those kind of edges, and some graphs don't have those kind of edges. Those kind of graphs, edges, are called self-loops. There's other weird kind of edges that might occur in a graph. What happens if we're such good friends that I'm your friend twice over? Okay, maybe I'm your friend two ways. I know you from college and I know you from high school. Okay? You can imagine graphs where you have more than one edge between two pairs of vertices. Those things would be called multi-edges. The average graph, what I would call a simple graph, a normal simple graph, that's the kind that you usually do the analysis on, does not have these loops and does not have multi-edges. Okay, but whether they have meaning depends upon your application. Okay, any questions? So, why might it make a difference to know whether you have a self-loop in a graph or not? Let's say we wanted to model gossip. Okay, you know, what is gossip? I whisper something to you, it's so juicy, you whisper it to somebody else, blah, 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 blah. I want to know how long it will take gossip to get back to me. Well, if you have a self-loop in a graph, okay, you would say that, you know, if you say, what is the shortest loop till gossip will get back to me? That would mean instantly. Okay, and that may or may not be what you mean. So maybe the graph is more meaningful without self-loops. Okay, any questions? Okay, so modeling is an important thing to do. Okay, and mine links to some chain of friends to the president. Let's say you want to get a message to President Bush. Could you do it by asking, say, hey, give this to a friend of yours who knows President Bush? Is there a link between me and President Bush? The answer is probably yes. Okay, have any of you heard of the game 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon? Yeah, so you know that in the, you know, somehow that's a game where you take movie stars. That's in the vertices are actors. And the edge is an edge between two people who were in the same movie together. And the question is there a path between Kevin Bacon and any other actor? And how long is it? And it turns out these links tend to be fairly short. So probably if I gave a letter to the right person I know, maybe the most powerful person I know, who might that be? Stephen Wolfram, who was here a few weeks ago, right? Okay, if I gave him a letter, I said, you give this to Bush. I suspect he knows a powerful figure. He could probably have some reach into the White House, okay, or if not, into a Congress or something like that. And from there, there's probably one or two hops to the president. So you might ask yourself, what is a path? Given two nodes, is there a path between them? Okay. Or what is the shortest path between them? Okay. And certainly if I want to get a letter to Bush quickly, okay, I would want to use the shortest path by that definition. So there's sort of questions about finding shortest paths that are natural in graphs that have meaning in other applications, not just transportation applications, but here in sort of a network analysis application. Any questions? What other things might we do? We might ask, is there a path of friends between any two people in the world? Is the whole world connected by links of friendship? Or are there isolated hermits, okay, who don't have any friends? Okay, or maybe there might be two different groups of people. Maybe it could be that there's a group of not somebody who has friends, but this isolated remote community where nobody has ever discovered these people. And, the rest of the world is one big component. Okay, but these people are not quite connected. So another important graph algorithm problem is, given a graph, identify the different pieces of the graph. Okay, the connected components of the graph. Okay, and that's really the question. And we say that a graph is connected if there is a path between any two vertices. Okay, that means it's all in one piece. If the graph is in two pieces, there is no path from here to there.
Okay, any questions?
Well, might connected components be a useful thing to you to think about in your max cut problem, out of curiosity? Okay, well, might it be interesting? It's not actually trying to give you a hint to go and do it, but how might finding connected components in the graph be interesting as far as your max cut problem? Okay, yeah. You're saying that I could, if I have a path in the graph, I could for every path in the graph cut all the edges on that path, okay, by simply putting them on, coloring this one red, blue, red, blue, red, blue. Okay, that's certainly true, okay? But any other applications of connected components?
Sir, what if you're understanding me that an unconnected component or an unconnected set can belong to any set? It doesn't matter.
Well, certainly an isolated vertex. This is Saddam Hussein vertex that has no edges out of it. You don't care what side it goes on, right? But what if I gave you a graph such that half the vertices had some connections between them, and another half of the vertices didn't have connections between them, but there were no connections from here to here? What implication would that have for max cut? Break it into two smaller problems, right? And solve each of these sub-problems optimally. Then you can solve the whole problem optimally, right? Everybody agree with that? So if, in fact, the graphs do have a lot of connected components, finding connected components is very, very easy to do. Okay, we'll either talk about that this class or next class. Okay? Now, I don't know if the graphs I gave you have too many connected components. My guess is they're relatively connected, but I don't have to make any promises. Okay? Any questions? So trying to find the pieces of a graph is a good algorithmic problem. It's not obvious. Again, if you look at the files that I gave you, there's no reason on looking way of looking at them that you would be able to tell whether they're connected or not. Okay, they might be or they might not be. Okay? Any questions? You have to do it in an algorithm to find out. Any questions? Okay? A question you asked worried about a lot in high school was who had the most friends, right? You look at the friendship graph. That meant you wanted to know which node in the friendship graph had the highest degree. We say the degree of a vertex is the number of edges that come out of it. Okay? And some graphs have high degree, some vertices have high degree, some vertices have low degree. Okay? Any questions? So a lot of problems, I claim, in the real world, okay, in applications, reduce to modeling your problem as a graph and then asking graph theory type questions on it. Any questions? Okay. So how do you represent graphs? Okay. In some sense, you have had to solve this problem a little bit in your max cut problem. There's several different ways you could store graphs. Okay. And in fact, for the problem that you're working on, it's actually, depending upon how you do it, it may be relatively simple. How does anybody, any ideas on how people plan on representing graphs in their program, the MaxCut program? What are people doing to represent graphs in their MaxCut program? Yeah? A table meaning an array. So you wanted to have one way you could represent your graph was you said an array. What's the dimension on this side of the array? One to the number of vertices. What's the dimension on the other side of the array? One to n. And what are you going to do? How are you going to represent edge ij? So you're saying that if edge ij is in the graph, you're going to have a 1 there. If another edge is not in the graph, you're going to have a 0 there, right? Does everybody agree that that's a way you could represent the topology of a graph? That is a well-known way to represent the graph. That is what I would call an adjacency matrix. Okay? What is an adjacency matrix? Well, it's an n by n matrix where mij is 0 if and only if there's no edge from I to j. So here we have vertex 4 is adjacent to which ones? 2, 3, and 5. Vertex 5 is adjacent to 1, 2, and 4. Okay? So the adjacency matrix is a fairly simple, straightforward way to represent the graph. Everybody agree? It's nothing too deep here. So what's good about an adjacency matrix? Yeah? Fast to do what? You're not going, when everybody says something that this is fast, you have to say to do what? Okay? So for, you know, a sports car is fast unless you want to get between here and England. Okay? Because you can't do it. Okay? Yes. Fast to tell whether or not edge ij is present, right? So if you want to ask, is ij present, you can do that in constant time in an array. That's fast. You can't hope to do it any faster. Yeah? So the question is, how much time does it take to store a graph? Well, first of all, you've got to malloc the space, or allocate the space. That is probably, depending upon how you do it in your computer, maybe it probably is n squared, maybe n squared. But what's worse is, in order to use this as a data structure, you have to initialize it first, right? It's not just give me this hunk of memory. But presumably, you know, if you just get fresh memory from your malloc, there's no reason to know what kind of garbage is in there, right? So you want to make sure there's no ones in that matrix before you start, or else you'll be fooled into thinking there's an edge there. So it will take order n squared time to initialize, but then constant amount of time to add an edge, delete an edge, or ask, is there an edge there? Any questions? Okay, so is that fast? Well, the parts of it are fast, but the initialization is slow. Any questions? You say it's slow. It's big O of n squared to do this. Therefore, it's slow. Well, what if I told you that the algorithm that you were trying to implement was going to be n cubed? Then the n squared part of it is insignificant, right? You're only initializing it once. And then, for certain graph algorithm problems, like solving all pairs shortest path, the best algorithms that you can really use are n cubed. And for those, sticking it, building an adjacency matrix is n squared, that's sort of for free. Okay? So for certain problems, adjacency matrices are good things. But for other problems, adjacency matrices are wasteful. Any questions? Now, probably the biggest waste, though, is not so much the time that it's n squared, but the memory that it's n squared. So let's stop and think about it. Suppose, let's say, you wanted to represent Manhattan, okay, as a graph. What is Manhattan? It is a city. Let's say we wanted to make the roadmap of Manhattan. How many vertices are there? Vertices, remember, in Manhattan are the junction vertices, the junction between two streets. How many junctions are there between streets in Manhattan? Somebody want to make a guess for these estimation problems? How many? You say 1,000. You say 1,700. I would say, how many avenues are there? 15-ish. How many streets wide is Manhattan? It goes up to 200th Street, I believe, up when you get up to like Washington Heights or something like that. And that doesn't count the lower part of the city. But let's say that there's, let's say 300, just for the sake of it. Okay, that's probably, that's probably around. So how many vertices do we have? What's that? I dare at 4,500? That's not a bad guess. 4,500. How many? Yeah, okay, yeah. The 15 don't run all the way, but, you know, God knows what happens in the village. It's very complicated. So maybe it's less than it's more.
Okay, any questions? Okay,
ballpark figure.
Okay.
So it's that many vertices. How big, if you want to store the Manhattan road graphs in your machine, how big is the adjacency matrix for Manhattan going to be? Well, 4,000. Let's say 4,000 by 4,000, that's what? 16 million cells.
Okay.
Which is probably now on about the border of what you could hope to put into your computer, right? If you're not using anything else. Because how many megabytes do you have now on your machine, typically? What? You have 8 gigs? Okay, so you're getting bigger. Well, if you say 256 is maybe a typical person here. That means that you've got how many bytes could you use per cell? So you could probably fit Manhattan in the memory this way. But it's pretty close. It's close to the Earth. Manhattan is a tough thing to store. Okay, it's probably doable. But can we store Manhattan on a Palm Pilot? How many of you have 8 gigabytes on your Palm Pilot? No, you do, okay? But how many? How can we instead, do we need to store, use an adjacency matrix? Well, this is very wasteful. Another representation of a graph that is storage-wise much more efficient is something called an adjacency list. Okay? In an adjacency list, what I'm going to do is store a graph where I've got an array of n elements, okay, and each element is going to be a linked list. So what am I going to do? To represent the graph, the edges adjacent to the ith vertex are going to be listed in the ith list of my array. So what are the edges adjacent to 4? Well, there's edge 4, 2. There's edge 4, 5. There's edge 4, 3. What edges are adjacent to 1? Well, there's 1, 2, 1, 3. Okay? So in an adjacency list, what I'm going to do is store a linked list associated with every vertex. Okay? Any questions? Yes? Well, I'm going to say, let's do it with this list because it's not a bad thing to do with lists. Hash tables, the performance of a hash table is weird. Depends upon your hash function. It depends upon what you're doing. So hash tables, let's not think about hash tables like this. I don't think about hash tables with this. Okay? I would think of it as an array of linked lists. Okay? Any questions? So, what is interesting about this? How big is the adjacency list representation of Manhattan? Okay, how much memory will it take to store the adjacency matrix list representation of Manhattan? I need a list for every vertex. I mean, an array of vertices. How long is this array going to be? 4,500. I now need to have a linked list of all the other vertices that this vertex is adjacent to. Each vertex represents a street corner. How many street corners is the average street corner in Manhattan adjacent to? 4, might be 5 if it cuts through Broadway, or down on the West Side Highway, maybe it's a rejunction of 3. But I will claim that the expected degree of any vertex is going to be about 4, right? It's not going to be a lot larger than that. So how much space do I need to store Manhattan stored as in adjacency list format? Something like 4 times, again, you might say this is a little bit larger, you have to have this thing, then maybe this is going to have an extra pointer field. But the ballpark is that we're now talking about something like 4 cells. It's going to be this times 4 cells. Okay, that's 16,000-ish or 18,000-ish. Multiply it by another factor of 2 or 3, this still fits in your Palm Pilot, right? does not realize. So this is a much sparser, representation of a graph, correct? So this, there's a big difference here. On a big sparse graph, the adjacency list representation is much, much more efficient. And it's the memory that will kill you before the runtime, okay? Because you can always let your program run a little bit longer. But if you don't have enough memory to store your graph, you know, you have no, you know, no chance. Any questions? So, yeah.
Like the problem we're working on for our homework, we don't care about
that.
We care more about speed than we care about memory.
In your case, you care more about speed than memory, so you could store it as an adjacency list or an adjacency matrix, and you'd probably get away with it. I think the largest graph I gave you was 100 by 100. So, you know, that you could store it either way. There's a question, though, of what operations do you want to do, okay, for your particular problem. And it might very well be that adjacency lists are better than adjacency matrices. Why might adjacency lists be better than adjacency matrices for your problem? Let's say you have this large array of sparse, you know, you have very few edges, but a lot of vertices. Yes, sure, you can store it. But your basic step is, I have a subset. How many things get cut? You want to enumerate through all the edges. Hey, am I cut? Am I cut? No, you don't exist. Don't exist. Don't exist. Don't exist. Am I cut? Don't exist. So what's bad about this? You're enumerating through. You're going to spend n squared time to check all the edges, regardless of how many edges there are. Right? Does everybody agree with that? On the other hand, what about this? Is it possible for me to check the edges in linear time? Yeah, basically. Am I cut, end? Am I cut, end? Cut. Okay? So this, by walking through these linked lists, I'm going to visit every edge twice. And visit all non-edges zero times. Okay? And in fact, depending upon how you represent it, maybe you would only put one copy of the edge in there. So I visit every edge once. So even though you have the memory to spend on this, it still might slow you down if you have a sparse graph. Any questions? Okay.
So what is the basic idea? So adjacency lists are really, for most of the algorithms we're going to talk about, the better way to go. Okay? For your problem, there may be even a simpler representation that is even better. Okay, just to sort of let you know, so in the interest of full disclosure.
Depending upon what, if all you're going to be doing is checking the pairs of edges, okay, and saying who's cut, it might be just to contain one array of all the edge pairs, right? An M by 2 array, where M is the number of edges. And just loop through saying, are you cut, and not worry about the linked lists and not worry about the, which grouping all the edges associated with a particular vertex. For your problem, that may not matter. For more sophisticated problems, having the ability to go through all the vertices, edges associated with a vertex is a big win. Any questions? Okay. So these are the two representations. Adjacency lists are the more generally useful one. And just to sort of show you that they are relatively easy to program, you know, it's not something to be frightened about. Here I have a example of an adjacency list implementation written in C++. Okay, what does it say? What are the data structures? Well, you've got a node structure. The node structure is the name of the... What this is thinking about is, if I take a look at this thing, their node structure is really here sort of going to be an edge structure. Namely, it's going to be used to represent the other vertex or the other node associated with the particular edge, right? the way we represent an edge in an adjacency list. The first vertex is given by the array position, the position of the list. The second endpoint is determined, is stored in each cell, where each cell represents one edge. So what is this doing here? It is saying that a node stores the other endpoint vertex and a pointer to another node. Is that clear? You have a V and an E, that's the number of vertices and the number of edges. And the adjacency list structure is basically an array of nodes and arrays of pointers to linked list elements, where the size of the array is max V, the maximum number of possible vertices in the graph. Right? So max V is going to be this thing. And then over each of these is basically a linked list. Okay? Any questions? So how do we fill it up? Well, what does it say? It says, read, read in the number of vertices and the number of edges, so you know it. Create a null node that points to itself. Okay, why do they do that? Again, in this case, he's using that. He's then for every single vertex adjacent sub j points to this node. This is the equivalent of nil, right? What he's basically doing here is initializing this to nil. Instead of initializing it to nil, he's initializing it to this dummy node for reasons that, you know, he wants to do, for whatever reason. Okay? Then, for each edge in the graph, read in the ij vertex. Then what are you going to do? Okay, basically, I and j, or we read x, read y. Allocate a new node, set the vertex in that node to X, and stick this on the wife list. Make another node, stick that vertex Y in there, and stick that on the X list. Thus, the new edge IJ has a representation on the X list and on the Y list. Any questions? And that's basically all it takes to read in a graph and store it as an adjacency list. Any questions? Okay. Any questions about adjacency lists? Yes?
So that means one edge is stored twice.
Each edge here is being stored twice. Why is that? Well, it depends upon what you want to do with your graph. In general, when you look at a vertex, you want to know all the edges associated with the vertex, right? If you want to know all the edges associated with a given vertex, if you don't explicitly put it in both places, it's not an easy thing to find out, right? You'd have to search through the whole graph to figure out what's adjacent to this guy. For many graph problems, you care about being able to tell who are my neighbors. Okay? For your problem, Max Cut, you probably don't. Or at least in the naivest version of implementation, you probably don't. Okay? So that's why in your data structure, you might only stick it in once. But in general, for general analysis, it's good business to stick it in twice. Any questions? And in fact, in some cases, it's good business to have a link between the two copies of it. So if you decide to delete this edge, it's easy to figure out where the next copy is to delete. Okay, so there are different games you can play, but conceptually, this is the basic adjacency list structure. Any questions?
Okay. So what are the trade-offs between adjacency lists and adjacency matrices? Which are better? Let's take a look.
Which is faster to test if an edge exists? Adjacency lists or adjacency matrices?
Yeah. You want me to be able to take votes on it, okay, rather than any one person. Which is better here, adjacency lists or adjacency matrices? Matrices. Why is that? Constant time for an adjacency matrix
How much time does it take to look up at whether an edge exists in an adjacency list? Okay, for three answers, one, and the, what you call it, the degree of the vertex. What is the right answer here? Depends upon the degree of the vertex. If this was the friendship graph, who has lots of friends?
Anybody who has lots of friends we think of?
Bill Clinton had lots of friends, as I recall. Okay? And then here we have the Saddam Hussein vertex. Okay? Checking to see whether or not I was a friend of Bill Clinton would require cruising through that entire list, right? Well, if it's somebody who doesn't have very many friends, it will take, basically it will take 9 proportional to, in the worst case, the number of friends, the number of edges adjacent to a vertex.
Yeah?
What is the number of things in there potentially be n?
So in the worst case, it is order n. But that is sometimes misleading to describe it that way. I find it better to describe it in terms of the degree of the vertex. Okay? Because in certain applications, you can say, for example, in the Manhattan problem, what is the time to look up an edge, whether or not the corner of 97th and Broadway is adjacent to 98th and Broadway? Okay, how much time should that take to tell? About 4 when you mean constant. And the reason is because you know the graph is a bounded degree. So when I describe the complexity of that, I will usually do it in terms of describing it in terms of the number of, in terms of the degree. Because sometimes I can get better analytical power by doing that. Any questions? Which is faster to find the degree of the vertex? Adjacency lists should be better, right? You could explicitly store that someplace. But an adjacency list to find the degree, I have to bop through this list. Okay, so if I'm doing it in an adjacency matrix, I've got to cruise through it to make the order n time, regardless of the degree of the vertex, right? So I have a win here on lists. Which takes less memory on what I will call sparse graphs? Graphs with relatively few edges. Lists. How much space does it take? And this is an important thing to see here. An adjacency matrix takes n squared time. N is the letter we use to denote the number of vertices. M is the letter to denote the number of edges. Why do we use M to denote the M to represent the number of edges? Because we do. Okay, that's something that I won't even, everybody does that. Okay? So remember that. I probably won't even remember to state that in general. Okay? But how much space does it take to store an adjacency list? Not n, because if it was n, that would mean it didn't take matter how many edges you had, right? Is it order n the number of edges? Well, it's not just a function of the number of edges, because what if we were looking at the friendship graph of a bunch of Saddam Husseins? Okay? There's no edges in the graph, but it's still using memory, right? So what's the memory? The adjacency part, the matrix part, the vector part is n, order n in size. What is the total size of the linked lists? Order m, right? Why is it order and not exactly m? Well, every edge might be represented twice. Okay, maybe you'll have some other padding on there, some other field you like. Okay? So the important thing to see here is that graphs, adjacency lists are order m plus n, okay, in space. And in fact, so our dream graph algorithms are going to run in order m plus n time, because that's linear in the size of the graph. Okay, any questions? Yes. Well, is it m times n? First of all, let's stop and think about it. Is it m times n? I don't see where the times is coming in. Let's count it. How much space do we need for the array of size n?
N.
Now for every edge, how is it going to be? What is each edge going to be? There's two linked list cells sitting out there that have this edge's name on it, right? Total number of edges, right? The degree of a vertex we will usually describe as D, where DI is the degree of the ith vertex. M is the total number of edges. Any questions? So which representation is better on dense graphs? Okay, where every vertex is adjacent to every other vertex. Yeah? Say matrix is better. How much space will adjacency lists take if we have a dense graph? How much space? N squared, right? Because what's the most possible interesting edges you can have in an N by in an N graph, vertex graph? Each vertex can be adjacent to every other vertex, right? So big O wise, N squared plus N, how does that compare to N squared? Big O wise, they're the same, correct? So which one is better on dense graphs? Matrices are probably a little bit more efficient because you don't have to store the pointers, maybe it's a factor of two, you know. So if you really know you've got every vertex connected to every other vertex, you might as well store it as a matrix, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So if it was a if it was a very dense graph, you're better off with a matrix. If you want to study the a graph where you know that every vertex is adjacent to every other vertex, okay, then in fact you might store it as a matrix. Okay. Any questions? Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it doesn't. Okay.
Good. Which is faster to insert edges?
It'll cost. Okay, I hear someone saying the same. To insert an edge into a graph, which would be faster? Well, on a matrix, you're just flipping a bit. What is the complexity of inserting an edge into a adjacency list? Well, you say, depending upon if there's a tail pointer, that's not really the difference. Because if I know the edge is not already there, there's no particular reason why the order of these elements makes any difference, right? So I could insert it at the beginning of the list. Okay? That will only be a problem if I also have to check to make sure I'm not inserting an edge that was already inserted. Let's say I'm keeping track of some, you know, of my friendships. You know, I now meet you. Nice to meet you. Might have been I forgot that I met you 10 years ago. Okay? So to avoid cluttering up my structure, I should delete the old friendship. So adjacency lists, in principle, you should be able to insert something in constant time, provided you don't have to check to make sure it's there, which will depend upon your problem and where your edges are coming from, and so on. What about delete? Which is faster to delete an edge from? Matrix. You flip a bit, it's constant time. Here, if it proves through the list, it's time proportional to the degree of the vertex. Right? Any questions?
Which is faster, to walk over all the edges in the graph?
That's what traversing a graph is, and that's a very fundamental thing. The list, right? Because that's going to be, again, the difference between an order n plus m to walk through the adjacency lists,
whereas to walk through the matrix, it's going to take n squared time. Any questions?
Which one is better for more problems in general?
Lists. Okay, so that's what I would usually, you know, usually that's the right answer. Okay, not always, but usually. Any questions? Okay, good. So, okay. Any questions about data structures for graphs? That's something you now guys should now know. So, okay. What other things can you do with graphs? Now, one of the most fundamental operations to do on a graph, okay, in fact, probably the most fundamental operation to do on a graph, is to reverse every edge and vertex, okay? And basically to walk over the graph, okay? So what do I mean by this? Why might you want to walk over every vertex in a graph, an edge in a graph? Well, one is, let's say you want to print out the contents of a graph. How do you print out the contents of a graph? Well, this graph is now this very complicated structure. Let's say we're dealing with adjacency lists from now on. So adjacency lists are what we'll probably talk about from now on. They're the more generally interesting one. Actually, we just have till we get to late in the unit, we'll talk about shortest paths. We may change that a little bit. Here I've got an adjacency list representation of my graph. How do I print out all the edges in the graph? Let me give you an algorithm to do so. Yeah? 4i goes from 1 to n. While not in the list, print it out, print. How many times will that print each edge?
Twice.
Okay. What if I want to only print each end once?
I print half of it, what does that mean? Okay?
What do you mean, print up to here? It certainly is not true that if I just print up to here, I printed everything. Because I'll have missed an end edge from here to here, right? Yeah?
Which vertices have I printed out?
Okay, yeah. So one possibility is when I print it, I go and I delete the other copy of it.
Okay.
Any other ideas? Okay. So one way to do it, the way that if you forced me to do it, just this job of printing out the graph, I would probably go the rule where I walk over each one, I print out edge ij, if and only if the number here is less than the number here. So I print it out in the canonical order, right? I know that edge 3, 6 is stored in the third list, and it's also stored in the sixth list, right? Here there's a 3, here there's a 6. If I want to print it out once, one way I could do it is say, okay, you want me to print, I'll walk down this list. Okay, this is a vertex B. Is B less than 1? If so, good, I'll print it. Is this one less than 1? I'll print it. Yeah. But basically, use symmetry to avoid breaking that problem. Any questions? Okay? But it should be clear that even this trivial question of printing out the edges of the graph was not as trivial as we thought. What if, let's say, I wanted to identify the connected components of a graph? Okay? Which parts of the graph are connected? This basically can be done by walking over the edges of the graph in the right way. But it's a little bit more complicated than just printing it. What I claim is a lot of graph problems can be solved by figuring out basically a way to walk over the edges of the graph in an intelligent way. Now, you're walking over them here. If you follow the adjacency list representation of the graph, you're walking them over in a very disconnected way, right? What are the edges that you're going to walk over? Start from vertex 1, ka-chunk, walk over them. Then vertex 2, which might be over here, ka-chunk. Vertex 3, ka-chunk. Notice you're not really walking over the graph, but you're sort of transporting yourself over the graph.
right? You're flying around the graph.
For a lot of graph algorithms, what you really want to do is to walk through the graph in a systematic way. Let's say you want to find a path from two vertices, between two vertices. Can you hope to find a path by jumping around it arbitrarily? You need a systematic way to walk over the graph. Okay, and that's where we get into breadth-first search and depth-first search. There's systematic ways to walk over a graph. Any questions? Okay? People look tired. Is it that it's nice outside, or this is boring, or which is it? A little bit of a combination. Okay, thanks.
Okay? So what is the point of graph traversal? Again, it looks a little bit dry, but actually this is sort of an important thing.
We want to find a way to walk over the edges of the graph. For efficiency, we want to make sure we walk in over each edge at most twice, a constant amount of time. For correctness, we want to make sure that we walk over the entire graph. Let's say that we were looking at the problem of getting out of a maze. What is a maze? It's got this complicated graph. Maybe you're in the Health Science Center or some other place that's trying to keep you from getting out. You're starting out here, and here is the door. How do you get out of the Health Science Center? Well, if you walk around it in an arbitrary manner, you're going to visit the same place over and over again, perhaps, right? You don't know that you're making progress. So how do you get out of a maze? Okay? Yeah. Somehow, in order to have any hope of getting out of a maze, you have to keep track of where you've been. You've got to leave a trail of breadcrumbs or something like that to show where you've been. You're going to remember the Greek mythological story about the Minotaur, and what did they leave in that one? Does anyone remember? Piece of string, right? So we cannot, we are not going to use a piece of string, we're not going to use breadcrumbs. But what we're going to do is, at each vertex of the graph, when we visit it, we're going to change a flag to show whether we have visited it or not. But it's not just enough, actually, to state whether you visited it or not. It's a question of whether you finish seeing everything that goes out of that vertex, right? Suppose in the course of walking around the hospital, I go from here, yes, I visited it. Yes, I visited it. Maybe I'll go around here, yes, I visited it. Yes, I visited it. Am I finished visiting this vertex? Should I ever visit this vertex again? Or I somehow need to remember that I still have this edge I haven't walked down. So there's two things I have to keep track of for every vertex. Have I discovered it? Meaning have I visited it once? And am I finished with it? Okay? Together, that's enough information to get out of the maze, to walk over the graph in such a way that I don't get trapped in loops, which is inefficient, and I visit everything, which is systematic. Any question? That's what the traversal algorithms that I want to do. So the key idea in graph traversal, breadth first and depth first search, is that I'm going to mark each vertex with its state. And in general, I'm going to maintain two flags for every vertex. Have I ever discovered it before? And have I completely finished exploring it? The other thing that I'm going to need to do, if I'm going to completely visit it, is I'm going to have a list of what vertices have I discovered, but not yet completely explored. Suppose, let's say, I want to completely explore the graph. Okay? Let's say that you are a weapons inspector, exploring one of Saddam Hussein's, weapons complexes. You know, he's got a tricky guy. He's got lots of hallways here. Okay, here's the door in. How do you make sure that you visit all the hallways to make sure that you don't miss the weapons? Well, it's not just enough to mark it, yes, 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 oh, I'm back to where I started from, I can go home. You need to say, wait a second, this one has not been completely visited, right?
I've got to go back there again to visit it again. Okay? So the components of a graph search are labeling whether I'm done, I have discovered it, a vertex, whether I have finished a vertex, and keeping track of all the vertices I have discovered and not yet visited.
Okay? That's the components of the search. Is it clear that all those components make sense? Okay? Any questions? That should be clear. Okay? So how can we do these traversals? The difference between depth-first search and breadth-first search, which are the two algorithms, the two main traversals, okay, is really all governed by what data structure do we use to store the, what's it called? The list of vertices that we have discovered but not yet finished exploring. There's a big difference algorithmically between depth-first search and breadth-first search. That we'll explore over the next class or so. But the important thing to realize here is basically this, the traversal algorithms are the same. Modulo that one, you store the vertices in a queue so that it's a first in, first out queue. So the one vertex that you explore next is the one that's been in the queue the longest. And depth first search uses stack, meaning you're going to visit the vertex that is been in the data structure the least amount of time. So if we think about our weapons inspector, if we were storing it in a breadth first search, we would slowly be fanning out from here and visiting it like this. If we were visiting it in a depth first manner, we'd keep cruising to new undiscovered things until we get stuck. And then we're going to backtrack. We'll pop things off the stack to tell us where we're stuck. Okay? Philosophically, those are the ideas. Any questions? Yeah. Well, if it's an unconnected component, we're in trouble. Okay? A disconnected component, we're in trouble, right? What if Saddam Hussein did not put his weapons in the hospital building? Instead, put it in the grocery store, down the street, and there's no way to get to the grocery store from here. We will not discover the weapons on this traversal, will we? But this is an interesting point, because it gives us a way to find connected components, right? Because now if I want to find out in this graph which vertices and edges belong to the hospital, I can start from this vertex and do the walk-in. And anything I discover has to be connected to it. And anything I don't discover was not connected to it. So that basic idea you had is really how you find connected components in graphs. And it's an important one. Talk about that a little bit more later. Does everybody sort of see that that's true? That connected components, that this traversal algorithm only works to get us out of a component of the graph. Any questions? Okay. So what does breadth-first search look like? Here is a pseudocode representation of breadth-first search. Okay? So what is this doing? This is doing, you take as input a graph and a vertex. And it says, do a traversal of the entire graph or the entire connected component starting from vertex S. So what do? For each vertex in the graph that is not the start vertex, we set its color to be white. White is virgin, undiscovered. Okay, it's undiscovered territory. The D matrix, we're going to keep track of the distance from the root just for the sake of it. Originally, every vertex is an infinite distance from the root. We haven't discovered a shorter way to get there, correct? And we'll set the parent pointer to a vertex to be nil. The parent of a node is going to be the vertex that discovered it. What does that mean?
So suppose, let's say, I'm walking in this graph. I start from here. I discover this vertex X. Who is the parent of X? So basically, the parent of S is X is going to be S. The parent is going to be the discoverer of the vertex. Okay? Any questions? What does this discoverer graph look like? Okay, we just consider the discoverers of a vertex. All the discoverer edges. What is that going to look like? You've got a bunch of vertices here. Every vertex in the component has been discovered, correct? How many times was every vertex discovered? How many times was the telephone discovered?
Once.
Okay, once it counts. Okay? So every vertex will be discovered by one person, one other vertex. What does that imply about discovery? Okay? If you think about it, it means that there is going to be a tree of discovery. Does everyone agree with that? That if you have everybody's discovered by one guy, okay, can the discovery relationship have a cycle in it? Can I discover you can A discover B, be discovered by B, B be discovered by C, C discovered by D, and D discovered by A? No, because somebody, you know, somehow had to start the process of discovery, right? So there are no cycles, and every edge and vertex is discovered once. It may discover lots of things, right? So we have a tree of discovery. And that's an important thing that will help us. That's the breadth-first search tree. Any questions? So what is the rest of the algorithm? We now have, for each vertex, we colored it white. Now what are we going to do? Well, we start out by coloring the start vertex. That's an S there, in case you can't see it. Gray. What does gray mean? Well, the vertex started out virgin, undiscovered. What is vertex S? That's the starting point. It is gray, right? Because we've discovered it, but we haven't finished exploring it yet. Right? So the evolution from undiscovered to discovered to thoroughly exploited and ruined, okay, goes from white to gray to black. Okay? Any questions? So what are we going to start out with? Vertex S is a distance zero from the root, right? Why is S a distance zero from the root? Because it is the root, right? What's the parent of the root? Doesn't have a parent, right? It was discovered, you know, we were given it, okay? So it has nobody who discovered it. What are the Q of vertices that have been discovered but not thoroughly processed? The start vertex. So this is all initialization. What is the way the search proceeds? Well, while the queue is not empty, take the first vertex from the queue. For each outgoing edge from that vertex, namely each edge in the adjacency list of that vertex, if that vertex has a color white, what does it mean? We have discovered a new vertex, okay? So what do we do on discovering it? Well, we immediately mark it as discovered. We say that we are the parent of it, we're the discoverer of it. And we also say that the distance of that vertex from the root is one more than that of the discoverer, right? If I am 5 units from the root, and I just discovered you, there's a way to get to you in the distance of 6. Right? Is that clear? Yes?
I can't look at this one.
S is just the one starting vertex that once we stick it in the queue, it is like any other vertex that has been discovered but not thoroughly processed. So basically, we're actually going to really process it. This is just initialization. We're going to process S like we process every other vertex in this loop. Because originally we stuck it in the queue, the first thing we're going to do is take it out of the queue. Is that clear? So S is just sort of a starting point for initialization purposes. Any questions? In general, U is the current vertex we're exploring. Anything that's adjacent to it that was not discovered before, we discover it, mark it discovered, claim the credit, tell them how far away it is, and stick it in the queue to be later explored. Any questions? What happens if we come upon a vertex that is gray? It has already been discovered. Do we need to stick it on the queue? No, it's already there in the queue. What if we come across a vertex that is black, meaning it's thoroughly finished processing? Is there any reason we want to do anything with it? No. So in general, what has happened? Okay, we've now finished this. Now what are we going to do? We probably should move this block of code back here a couple steps, just to get rid of the spaces. We're going to dequeue an element from the queue. Okay, and what are we going to do? Oh, yes, what head did here was tell you which was the element that was the front element. We have to actually delete that element from the queue also. Because we're now finished with this vertex, right? So in this particular implementation, head copies the top of the queue. Dequeue means take it off the queue. Okay? So we're now going to delete that vertex U from the queue and officially color it black to say we finished processing it. Right? We've looked at all the outgoing edges from it and finished processing it. Any questions? Yeah?
Is that GDP or whatever component keeping track of the degree of the vertex?
No, this is keeping track of the distance. This is keeping track of the distance from the root. Okay, why is that? Just take a quick look at this. I know that you're running out of time. But basically what that's keeping track of, if we build this breadth-first search tree, it keeps track of how far are we from the root in that breadth-first search tree. That's what it's keeping track of. And since every time we discover a new node, it is going to be one level deeper than the guy who discovered it. That's what that's saying. Any questions? Okay. Fair enough. We'll talk about this next class. Any questions? Okay, have a good weekend. We'll talk next week. Thank you.